I still thought I had, I actually thought at that point that I had something that's called Norwegian scabies, which is also called crusted scabies, where the person gets scabies and the skin thickens,
uh-huh.
and the scabies live in the thousands or millions under the skin. It's one of the, it's a disease that has one of the highest suicide rates in the world, and I mm-hmm. think I can understand why.
You've done a lot of research on your own, haven't you?
I did some for the first year, but after the first year I gave up, and my daughter took it up, and she continued from it, because I had basically given up.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, so after the finished the treatment by the Lyme doctor, and it still didn't clear it up, and I told him a few times, I think I got a parasite. And he said, well, even, you know, whatever you got, you need antibiotics just by looking at your skin. So I'd pretty well given up, actually, but in August of 04, my daughter found the report by the NPA. So I signed up on their list registry. And then a couple of months later, I think everybody that was on the registry got a note saying that... I forget what it was, but I responded to it, and I said, thanks very much, because at least somebody's paying attention to this. And then that began, sort of a rapport with Deborah about what it was about. And it went from there, and she's been monitoring. She suggested I see a naturopath and get scrapings done by a naturopath because they're more open-minded. So I did, and the scrapings were looked at by the NPA, and I was told that they were consistent with the Oklahoma study.
David, we'll come back to you in a moment, and thank you for sharing a very difficult path and having the courage to step forth with this information for our benefit today, and we'll come back to you in just a moment. Deb, will you pick up with David mentioning the Oklahoma study and talk a little bit about that, unless there's something you need to say before you do that?
Well, David is typical of so many of these people who have contacted us, and you know, when you've done head lice, as it were, for so many years, you get really comfortable with doing something that's not so glamorous. But the philosophy at the NPA has always been the most important disease is the one you have, and the expert is the person who has it. And we learned so much by listening to people like David, who, by the way, I'm not sure whether or not he mentioned, but the onset of his symptoms began after swimming in a local pond or a lake. I'm not sure which it was, but that seemed to be the a factor that changed his life. And that's so common among the people who reported to us. The onset of their symptoms began when their basement flooded or if they had had some sort of... a landscape problem, or they had moved into a home that used to be an agricultural field or a dairy farm. And there just were common denominators that seemed part of nature that we started hearing consistently. And finally, and thankfully, and I say he is a hero, and I mean that by every stretch of the imagination, the physician who heads up the Oklahoma Department of Health, his name is Michael Crutcher. He's an MD and has a master's in public health, was also getting the same kinds of calls, and he was not dismissing them. And there's no way to ever express how important it was for him to have facilitated a clinical study under the auspices of the Department of Health in Oklahoma, where we got a cross-section of the people who were reporting to us on a voluntary basis to Oklahoma, where in a clinical setting, with his observation as a physician and two other doctors, scrapings were taken, they were photographed under the microscope, and the digital images were forwarded along to the NPA and our consultants for us to do the work. And the work was tedious because none of us really had a preconceived notion of what we were going to find. And lo and behold, after 6 or 7 months, we were able to break the code and find the Calambula, which is a minute organism. It's the most common arthropod on the planet, very inconspicuously hidden within the skin, almost looking like the skin. And there began the rest of the story. So by having figured out how to really read the images, which required incredible time and skill to be developed, we were able to find 18 of the 20 participants in this study showing evidence of them, And we have had the study published in a very respectable journal, actually, one out of New York City, where we worked with the American Museum of Natural History and the entomologists there. Interestingly enough, when the image work was shown to the entomologists there, they were unanimously consistent, and there was great consensus that, of course, these were Calambula. But when word got out that they were Calambula being found in people's skin, then everybody started thinking, how can this be? Because they say that's impossible. Of course, at the NPA, when we hear that's impossible, that's a red flag. We say, well,
Deborah, can you explain why they say that's impossible?
Well, this little organism, which look at it straight in the face, if it's so ubiquitous, if it's so common to every facet of our life, everywhere there's dirt, they are there, then it's almost suspect to think that no one's ever looked at them in humans before, frankly. But when they have been found in humans, and they have been found over the past couple of centuries, they've been dismissed as an accidental occurrence. There's never really been an orchestrated effort to look at them in a clinical way as we did in Oklahoma. And I'm not saying that the Oklahoma work was the be-all and end-all, but what I'm saying is it's a great beginning. There's a lot of information there that comes from what we did as basic fundamental research. And throwing away the information that came from that work is a foolish thing to do, and this is why we're here talking to you today, is it's a building block that we feel brings great credibility to the plight of these individuals, and hopefully will encourage others to take notice. If they've blown this off thinking it's not real, maybe they will reconsider it, because this is communicable. We have no doubt that this is communicable. So the longer we wait, the more foolish we will be. Because once you've acquired it, we have absolutely no way of knowing how to end it.
Let's stay with this concern about Calambula being ubiquitous and now being what's from the skin scrapings identifiable as being what's creating the lesions, the serious quality of life issues for the people who have, at least in this first study, and I know that you're making tremendous efforts to have these studies replicated at different institutions and through government agencies, which we'll talk about in a minute. What is it if you have, and I know these are hypotheses that we're discussing here, and I'm is that correct? Would you suggest that some of this is hypothesis?
Some of this is factual.
Okay. Why the big concern that if in fact this is emerging, what's the big concern and why all the doors being shut?
There's just this, a bias that's entrenched among the dermatology community and probably the infectious disease community. It's sort of self-perpetuating. Nobody really wants to see these patients. They find them to be terribly demanding and frustrating, very focused, as one would be. I mean, how are they supposed to be? They're desperately looking for validation. I think many of them would prefer to have the validation even before the cure because they've been alienated from their families, their loved ones. They've lost their jobs. They've lost their income, all because it's been assigned to a psychiatric etiology. And let's just say, for the sake of discussion, it is a psychiatric etiology. Then we have an emerging public health problem with a psychiatric basis. I don't think that's the situation, although there's no doubt that once you are affected by this and so terribly abused by the people you trust to help you, you get to be terribly depressed, no question about it. But there are some that think that you must have had a predisposition. I don't know about that, because when you look at the data, people who reported to us at the time of onset, the vast majority of them said that their health was very good, actually, or even excellent. Nobody came to us and said that they had Lyme disease and then later developed these symptoms. There was never any mention of Lyme disease or any other kind of bacterial problem. These people were healthy, but there was a particular event that somehow put them in the wrong place at the wrong time where they were able to acquire this. And there isn't one particular way to get it. I mean, we've talked to people who, like I say, built their new home on a former dairy farm, and they were working in the yard where the cows had left their dung. And these particular organisms, known as Calambula or springtail, are in nature there to break things down. That's where they hang out. So there's something that's signaling them, that's calling them up. And when they get called up, they don't get called up, here's a bug or there's a bug that you can pin to a piece of paper. They get called up by the thousands. And once they become established, it's very difficult to stop them in their path because they're mandated by Mother Nature, who's quite a woman, to break things down. And that's what's happening to people's skin. It's getting broken down by them.
And why wouldn't, why is it difficult to see them in the scrapings? You mentioned that after 6 months of a very focused review of the computer digital slides, that it began to become evident that they were there in clusters and individually. Why is this not something that can be taught and is not being taught, and how come there's that resistance?
Well, that's a great question, Barbara, because we learned after the fact that scraping is scraping. So when the scalpel was used to scrape the skin, we were actually breaking apart the evidence as we did it. Since that time, we've actually made tremendous progress in using digital imaging to get a better handle on what's on the skin or in the skin. It's phenomenal what you can see, but not so phenomenal when you think about how MRIs and PET scans and CAT scans have revolutionized diagnostic medicine. Unfortunately, it hasn't revolutionized the mindset of the entomology people, because they're still wanting to pin a bug to a piece of paper. And while there's a great value to doing that, they've been missing this for over a century, and there's nothing wrong with looking at things from a different perspective. So while the skin scraping is something that enabled us to get from A to B, I think we have all kinds of different technology now that would allow us to do an even better, more definitive job with the subjective requirement of having the skill to look at the image. But you have to start somewhere. And that's another part of publishing a paper on a trailblazing kind of a subject is, you know, the first thing we do is annihilate you, and people who want your job want to discredit you and all of that. But again, you know, we can deal with that. But what we want to happen is for it to be built upon, and we're making progress with people in high places, as it were, to do that. But it's taking way too long for people like David, who've already been suffering for 3 years and have lost everything. So we thank you, Barbara. I know we're not at the end of the discussion, but I can't thank you enough for giving these people a voice through David and myself today.
You are most welcome. I'm Barbara Glickstein, and you're tuned into Health Styles on WBAI 99.